It's really great to be here on Radio Naturopath on July 17, 2019. Great to be here. How are you today, Ron?
I'm just doing fine, Franny.
That's great. That's very nice. You know, I've noticed something funny.
What?
More people are calling me Franny.
I call you Franny.
You do.
I do that. Is it unprofessional? Is it okay?
Whatevs. You know, I have patients who call me Dr. Franny.
Dr. Franny.
So the deal is with Dr. So the thing is, naturopathic physicians, the thing is, we're nice to you. Not that other doctors aren't, but we're particularly nice to you because we spend time with you and we listen to you and we develop a relationship with you. So it is not uncommon for your patients. It's not uncommon for your patients to feel close to you, and they don't want to call you doctor last name. So they feel closer to you than calling you Dr. Storch. And sometimes they do, but when they feel close to you, they want to call you by your first name. But they're like, oh, wait a second. Well, she's a doctor. I shouldn't really call her by her first name. So you become Dr. Fran. And I've heard many naturopaths be called Dr. Fran, Dr. Lauren, Dr. Bob, Dr., you know, name your first name, your favorite first name, Dr. Kurt, whatever. So if they're feeling really comfortable with me, then I get called Dr. Franny. Which I think is so funny because it's sort of a paradox. I have lots of respect for you and I elevate you to the status of doctor, but I also think you're really cute and adorable and I want to call you Franny.
Okay.
You are really cute and adorable. Oh dear.
Well, you are.
Yeah, I'm cute and adorable. You know, yeah, cute and adorable.
But then again, that's in my eyes.
Do you feel like cute and adorable helps you solve health problems?
You know what? If it solves the health problem, I don't care.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
How's that?
Sure. Better cute and adorable than mean and cranky, I suppose.
Yes.
Okay. I don't want to interrupt whatever you got going on over there. Okay. So
I'm trying to send my show over. Go.
Okay. So anyway, today is July 17th, so it's a very special day. We have two very special birthdays. So last week it was my sister's birthday, and this week it's my friend Beth's birthday. So big shout out to Beth. It's a very special birthday for her. In honor of her birthday, we did a very special bike ride on Sunday. It was hard. I was over my head, but I was taken care of, and I really, really appreciate that because I got to ride with people I don't usually ride with, even though at times I couldn't see them. But at times I certainly could, and I got, like I said, I got to ride with people who I don't ordinarily ride with, and it was fun, and we went up to Woodstock, and let me tell you, English Neighborhood Road, that is a cool road.
It is a cool road.
Yeah, so if you get to ride your bike, you want to ride, if you're going to ride English Neighborhood Road, you want to start on Brickyard and take it to 169. You don't want to go the other way.
Right.
Otherwise, you'll be climbing and climbing. Unless you want to hurt yourself.
Well,
unless you
want to get out of the valley of Woodstock, you have to climb. So that's a problem that we've had in the past with the steeplechase is that everybody complains about, you know, they love to go to Woodstock, but they don't always love to leave because it's five miles.
Because I said to Beth, my goodness, we descended so much. We must have been on top of something really big. And she said, no, that's not it. You're going into a depression. It's the Woodstock Valley. It really is a valley, and it's much lower than everything around it. And you're right. You have to climb out of it, and climbing out of it is an issue. So it wasn't that bad. But anyway, so super happy birthday to Beth, and also the other very special birthday is Saul Nesselroth. He's our elder. He's in our bike club, and he is 92 years young today. And
yes.
This past Saturday,
Yes. Nice.
And so Beth and Saul have the same birthday, except they're a few years apart. On Saturday, we all rode our bikes. The various ride levels of Thread City Cyclers met up at the Red Barn Creamery in Stores. And Saul bought us all ice cream, which is very, very nice. It's become a tradition to go to the Red Barn for Saul's birthday. He's very graciously... on his birthday, he buys us ice cream.
I think that's kind of a funny thing.
It's lovely.
Shouldn't we be treating him?
Perhaps, but...
But he seems to feel special about it.
That is something that people do, though. They treat other people on their birthday as a way of celebrating their birthday. I think it's a very sweet thing that he does that. literally, because it's ice cream. So it was very nice to see everybody there, and then it was very nice to ride in honor of Beth on the next day. So I did a lot of riding this weekend, so guess how much riding I did on Monday?
None.
Big shout out to Rob for taking me on the boat and tossing me in the river.
Yeah. Yeah. Toss you in the river.
Oh, it was so good.
As long as he retrieved you after he tossed you in.
Well, there was the tide was coming in, and so he did have to tie a pad to the boat with a rope, and so that, you know, I wouldn't get, you know, caught away from the boat. It was a lot of fun, and it was so good. Let me tell you, if you are if you exercise and you push yourself, you want to have a rest day. One nice thing is to go splashing about in a pool or in a natural body of water, and you don't even necessarily have to do a formal workout, just to hang out in the water and bathe. It was so good for my body, and I didn't ride at all on that day, and I just hung out in the water and splashed around and moved around, and it was just the best thing. I felt so good after that. Let's jump into to what's going on. So the first thing, we said that we might, for the next few weeks, we were going to update you on what's going on with Ron and his Lyme disease. So so how are you?
You. Okay. Not right. Great. I have good days and bad days. It's okay. Still not good.
So you had 7 weeks of doxycycline, right?
Yes, I did.
And now you've been changed to a cephalosporin, which is what I suggested, and I'm very pleased that Dr. LaGuardia put you on a cephalosporin,
right.
And the one
right.
You were
and
given
I'm on
was
that for 3 more weeks.
Cefprazil, right? Mm-hmm. So you're on 3 weeks of Cefprazil, so we're
yep.
Going to see how that works for you. And at the same time, I put you on some other things. It was recommended to us that perhaps you need a binder. So one of the things that happens with Lyme disease is, as you're killing the spirochetes, as you're killing the bacteria, they break apart and they fall apart. And they dump their toxins into your body, which can make you not feel well. So even though you're killing the Lyme, you don't feel well. So you can get neurotoxic symptoms. You can get brain fog. You can get more joint pain. And so you had a couple of days where you're feeling really good, and then you had a day where you really felt bad.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you were having what we call a Yarish-Herxheimer reaction. So Herxheimer reaction is what I said. It's where you're getting antimicrobial activity, where you're killing the microorganism and it breaks up inside your body. And then the toxins, you can't clear the toxins as fast as you're killing the microorganisms. So in order to help with that, one of the things you can do is bind them up. And one of the ways you can bind them up is with things like clay and dirt from the earth. So we gave you a product that has humic and fulvic acid in them, and they're binders.
You're feeding me dirt.
Yeah, I'm feeding you dirt. Well, I'm giving you magnesium too that has dirt.
Yeah.
So the humic and fulvic acid, the purpose of that, so when you take these binders, you have to take them away from anything else you're taking. So you want to take them at least an hour before putting anything else in your mouth. Well, you can drink water if you want to, but that's it. But anything you don't want to be bound up, you don't want to take it near that because, you know, you take some magnesium or you take even your antibiotic, it will bind that up. So you don't want to do that. So you take it away from other things. So you're taking one twice a day and you're taking it an hour away from anything else you take. So that's the way to do it. So that was another interesting thing we came upon. I was reading up on silver. I don't know if I talked about the silver last week. I was reading up on silver, and I saw that there are different potencies of silver, and that silver nanoparticles are good at being a general antimicrobial. So this is not colloidal silver. This is silver nanoparticles. So it has so many parts per million. So we got you a pretty high parts per million silver nanoparticle product, and you're hitting that pretty hard right now. So that's the new antimicrobial we're giving you. And in the meantime, we're doing Nutramedics products. You're taking cementobanderol as well as berberpinella. So the cementobanderol, the antimicrobials, and cementobanderol have been studied to kill all of the forms of Lyme disease. They kill spirochete, L-form, and cysts. And so that's why we're using them. We're also trying to get at the cysts because you're taking oregano oil. And then, of course, the berber and the pinella are helping to cleanse your body as well. The berber is not so much a binder as it induces the liver, kidneys, and lymphatics to flush stuff from the body. So you're taking that too.
I'm taking a pile of stuff.
I know. And that's kind of what happens with Lyme, though. If you want to treat it right.
You've got this huge sheet of information that I have to look at every day, and I have to decide which one I'm, or what I'm supposed to be doing and when I'm supposed to be doing it. And some of them I can't take with others because I have to wait like an hour after I've taken other supplements. And
that's right.
You take this supplement.
Yeah, the binders you can't take at the same time. Right. And taking a binder is important because the thing is, this is an insidious and relentless microorganism.
Tell me
so
about it.
So you have to fight it. And if your immune system is a little bit down, which yours is, because you've been under a lot of stress, you're going to have a harder time having your actual immune system fight it. So you need assistance from other stuff. And I can't emphasize more that one of the things that helps you get over anything is rest. And I keep telling people this, that rest is a treatment for whatever you've got going on. And you know, they want me. And I've been talking to people about weight loss and rest, that rest helps you lose weight. So here's a couple of things that I wanted to segue into. So the big new thing for Ron, as we said, is that he changed up his antibiotic, and that's a good thing. Because Lyme literate doctors, when they're giving you antibiotics, they are going to change your antibiotic so that the spirochete doesn't get used to whatever antibiotic you're taking. And so you're on your second antibiotic now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing we did is we did a blood test for co-infections, which you haven't drawn yet. So we'll find out if you have any co-infections. If you have the most likely co-infection for you to have, I think is Babesia, because that's the one, if anybody gets a co-infection, that's the one that you usually see. And if you have Babesia, then we have to hit you with some other things. Yay. So,
oh boy.
Right. But
I think I can hardly wait. Yes, right. No, not sure.
I don't think you have Anaplasma or Ehrlichia, because you would be sicker, believe it
okay.
or not.
Wow.
And Bartonella, I just don't see Bartonella as much. Rocky Mountain spotted fever is not out of the question. You don't have spots. But it's not out of the question. I have seen it around here, but I vote for, if you have a co-infection, I vote that it will be Babesia, because I've seen people more regularly with that. And in which case we would give you, you might wind up getting another antibiotic, which would be your atovaquone and azithromycin. So we're going to find that out. How do you feel today?
Not great. I'm having an off day today.
So, and what do you feel like in your body? Do you have joint pain, brain fog? What's going on?
I have joint pain with that knee, that particular knee.
Your left knee.
My left knee, uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, the good knee. I have joint pain there, and then I also have been really having problems with the brain fog today.
Oh.
Just not good.
Right.
And I've got no power at all. I taught a class this morning, and I pretty much taught it just by teaching it, not being involved in it in any way.
Right.
I just couldn't get my wattage up. I just couldn't get to the point where I was working hard and settled into it. So I'm a little off today.
So I hate to say this, we might add one more thing.
Oh boy.
Just coenzyme Q10.
Okay.
Because that'll help to energize you. Because your cells are exhausted. You have a lot of, there's a lot of energy being spent. Your energy, you know, your cells are trying to fight this microorganism. And it may also be that, the spirochetes are hijacking nutrients for you to have energy. So I found that when I had Lyme disease, the coenzyme Q10 was useful. I had palpitations. That was one of my symptoms. And the CoQ10 really helped with that. So we'll probably have you take some coenzyme Q10. And that you can take with the rest of your supplements. You don't have to take it away from anything. But the other thing is, if you're having a lot of brain fog, then we're going to have you do extra Pinella. So when you're having brain fog, you do extra Pinella. You do the Pinella and you take it every 15 minutes until you feel better. And we might have you do an extra binder. The humic fulvic acid stuff that we gave you.
Mm.
So we'll see if that does anything for you. But the Pinella, you can do that. Do it like for, take 2 hours and take it every 15 minutes and see if that helps you. And you can take the Pinella and Berber together, because the Berber will help to clear toxins out of your body in general, and the Pinella is a nerve-specific thing. So we'll see if that helps, and we'll report back, and we'll let you know how it goes.
Okay.
So,
the weekly Ron check-in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a great question. So let's call her Joanne from Willington, had asked me this great question. She said, I only have a bowel movement 3 to 4 times a week. Why is that bad? So some people don't have a bowel movement every day, and they think that that's normal for them. And then they come to me and I'm like, no, you can't do that. And now if they're extremely happy and healthy and they have no other problems in their life and that's their schedule, then I probably would leave it alone. But that is generally not what I see. People who come in and they're having a bowel movement 3 to 4 times a week, they usually have a lot of other things going on. So one of the things we want to do is get them going to the bathroom every day. We want them to have a bowel movement every single day, preferably more than once if possible. So if you eat enough fiber, you're going to have a bowel movement every day. Or if you're, the other thing I'll say is if you're eating the right diet for you, you will have a bowel movement every day. To wit, our friend Carl, you know, Carl Goldkamp, who went through the awful Crohn's disease, and he wound up finding that his wheelhouse was the keto carnivore diet. He has bowel movements. He doesn't need a lot of fiber, and he has bowel movements every day. That's because that he's eating a diet that works for his metabolism and his body, and so he's regular. So why is it not good to have a bowel movement only 3 to 4 times a week? So here's why. Even if you're not having a bowel movement, you have stool collecting in your large intestine. In fact, what we'll see is people who are having issues, if they're having some kind of issue, if they're having abdominal pain or for whatever reason, they have to go into the ER and have a CAT scan, or if they have CAT scans for other reasons and you check their abdomen, you always see stool in the colon. So, you'll say, and sometimes you'll see it impacted, but you will generally see stool in the colon. So if there's stool in there all the time, shouldn't it be coming out? The answer is yes, it should be coming out. Why is it there in the first place? Well, let's backtrack and talk about what is stool. So hopefully this will be all right with you, but I mean, this is a clinical discussion, and it's important to know because it's important to understand what's going on in your body. What stool mostly is microorganisms. The vast majority of the composition of stool is microorganisms. It's bacteria. A lot of it is probiotic bacteria. Some of it is commensal bacteria. That's bacteria that lives in your body. And it's waiting for an opportunity to overgrow and make a mess of you. But commensals will also, if they're, they're just basically squatters. They stay there because it's a nice place to live and they don't particularly do anything for you. They can potentially overgrow and cause symptoms. So that's the bulk of what's in your stool. Some of the stool is undigested food. There's going to be some level of undigested food in your stool, even if you're healthy. You know, you didn't chew everything. Some of it's going to come out the other end, and that's okay. What else is in your stool is fiber. So there's going to be fiber for the probiotics, for the microorganisms to live on. There's going to be some viruses, and there possibly could be some level of parasites. And, you know, some people live with parasites and they're not a big deal. If your body if you're happy and healthy and you have some Endolimix nana living in your stool, it's fine. If you have lots of gas and bloating and you never feel quite right and you have Endolimix nana living in your stool, I want to kill it. I want to help you kill it. So.
Wow, that's pretty violent.
Yeah. Well, Endolimix nana, it's if you're going to, you could live in the water. If you're going to go then live in my friend, no, you can't live there. Sorry, just not going to happen. We're going to escort you out with some oregano oil and probiotic and you know, clay and other stuff. So there. Okay, so what else is in your stool? Bile is in your stool. So bile has a couple of things. Bile has bilirubin in it. And it's normal to have bilirubin in your stool. And what's bilirubin? Bilirubin is a breakdown product of hemoglobin because your red blood cells live about 120 days. And then they get dinged and banged and oxidatively damaged and stuff like that. And your body sees fit to recycle them. So they go into your spleen and your liver and they get chewed up. And their parts get licensed out for sale. Some of the stuff that's in them will get recycled to make other parts of your body, and some of it will get recycled to make new blood cells. And some of the bilirubin, the breakdown product of the hemoglobin, is going to be in your bile, and it's going to come out the other end. And bilirubin is what makes your stool brown. All right. That's what gives it this little, your brown color. If you have a biliary blockage where bile is not getting into your stool's going to be clay colored or white, because that's what color it really is. All those microorganisms, they're clay colored or white when you mix them together. What makes them brown, what makes your stool brown, is mostly bilirubin. The food you eat can also color your stool. So if you have a big feed of chocolate, your stool will be darker brown. If you have a big feed of beets, now beets has a compound in it that comes out the other end. And in fact, if you want to know what your gut transit time is, that is how long it takes for your food to get from your mouth to come out the other end, you eat a plate of beets. And eating one beet is probably not going to do it. And I'll tell you that the amount of beets that we eat in our salad is not enough to do it. You have to eat like a good serving of beets, like half a cup or a cup, and have that be your vegetable for the night, or one of your vegetables for the night. And then you'll see it. And the pigment that comes out from beets will also show up in your urine. So if you have no symptoms at all and you're feeling pretty good and suddenly you look down and your urine is bright orange, you're like, just think back to yourself. Did you eat beets within the last day? Like, did you drink beet juice? Or, because drinking beet juice will do it too. Did you drink beet juice? Did you eat a lot of beets? And if you did, there's no problem at all. It's just this color that comes through and it doesn't metabolize so well. And so it will color your stool and it will color your urine. So you'll have this lovely pink shade in your urine. So pigments in plant matter will sometimes color your stool as well. Also, the other thing that happens is your liver is this amazing organism, and so it does a lot of detoxification, and so it breaks down a lot of products that come into your body. So you do a lot of metabolism of your own byproducts of inflammation, your own byproducts of building and repair of your body. You do a lot of byproducts of making protein, and also detoxification. There's a lot of enzymes in your liver that break down what your liver sees as toxins or just products in your body that it no longer needs, and also regulates hormones. So your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, they all go through your liver, and the extra will get labeled with a hydroxyl group, a group that makes it water soluble, and then it gets dissolved or emulsified in the liver and it comes out. So that's in your stool as well. So you're excreting toxins in your stool, you're excreting bilirubin, you're excreting plant matter, fiber, some food, and so there's a lot of stuff in your stool. And of course, there can also be oils in your stool. And if you eat a fair bit of fat, some of the fat's going to come out in your stool. It's normal to excrete some of the fat. If you have an excessively fatty stool, it can mean that you have some kind of malabsorption. So why would it be bad for you to have a bowel movement only 3 to 4 days? Well, think about what's in that stool. What's in your stool is intended to leave your body. That's why it's there. So getting out in an efficient manner is a good idea. Efficient does not mean having diarrhea. So diarrhea is when you have, diarrhea and loose stool are not exactly the same thing. So diarrhea, when you have diarrhea, you have loose stool or watery stool. So diarrhea really means excessive frequency of stool. Constipation really means not enough stool, that you're really, we in naturopaths anyway, we define constipation as you're having a bowel movement less than once a day. That it doesn't mean you're having a hard stool. That's what it means. But people use the word constipation to mean they're having trouble passing their stool. But that's not what constipation is. Constipation is you're having a bowel movement less than you should, like 3 to 4 times a week or less. That's constipation. Diarrhea is you're having probably more than 3 bowel movements a day. You're having 4, 5, 6 bowel movements a day. Then there's loose stool, there's watery stool, then you describe the stool. And if you want to describe stool, there's the Bristol Stools chart, and you can take a look at that, and it will help you get an idea of what a normal stool should look like.
Wait, the Bristol's stool chart.
Bristol stool chart, yes,
indeed. Okay, so there's a chart that shows you different types of stool?
Uh-huh.
And we're not talking bar stools?
No.
No?
No. No, there's 7 types on it.
It's like a scat chart,
pretty much. But it's but there's meanings to each of the stool. So So there. So when you have, depending on the shape of your stool, that has it has different meaning. It can tell you what's going on with your health. So Bristol stool chart, there's type 1, type 2, type 3. There's 7 types. There's which I could go through. I don't think I'm going to do that right now. But anyway, if you're interested, you can take a look at it and you can see what there are conditions that are correlated with the Bristol stool chart. If you are if you have type 2, 3 or 4 type 2, 3 or 4 stool, then you're doing pretty good. So maybe even type 5. But those are signs of healthy stool. And then the other types can mean that you have other issues going on. Hmm. All right. So anyway, if you look at the Bristol stool chart, people have made jokes about it. It's kind of silly. Anyway, so if you have stool that's sitting in your colon for too long, remember that there are compounds in there that your body has marked for excretion. It's marked for detoxification. And so if they're sitting in there too long, they can cause oxidative damage and mutagenicity locally in the colon. And also, you can reabsorb toxins that are sitting in your stool back into your body. This becomes of particular concern for men. So if you're a man and you have trouble with constipation, your prostate shares a wall with your anus, with your anus and your rectum. So if you have stool that's just sitting there, you can reabsorb hormones from your stool back into your prostate, and that will give you it will make your prostate enlarge. Whether you have benign prostatic hyperplasia or if you actually put you at risk for prostate cancer. So if you have stool that's just sitting there, regardless of your gender, you can reabsorb toxins, the things that were marked for excretion, and you can reabsorb hormones. So that becomes a problem if you're looking at reproductive cancers. You're more likely to get breast cancer if you're not having a bowel movement every day, because what can happen is for example, estrogen gets conjugated. Your extra estrogen will get conjugated. What that means is that a hydroxyl group gets attached to it. A hydroxyl group is like a little organic chemistry piece that makes the estrogen water soluble. Hormones are generally fat soluble, so they're going to dissolve in your bile. But in order to get them out of your body and dissolve better, they need to be made water soluble. So the conjugation enzymes in your liver will add this hydroxyl group to your hormones, and now they're marked for excretion. You can't really use them when they're in that form in your body. So they go into your bile and they get carried out through the bile into the lymphatics and then into your colon, into your biliary system, and then ultimately into your digestive tract and come out through your colon. Now, if they sit there for too long, anaerobic bacteria can deconjugate them. They can take that piece off of them that makes them water soluble, and then you reabsorb those hormones. So now your hormone status can go up. So if you're not having regular bowel movements and you are having menstrual irregularities, you're having fibrocystic breasts, you have uterine fibroids, or if you're a man and you're having an enlarged prostate, if you're not having a bowel movement every day, that can be contributing to it. One of the first things that naturopaths do is we ask you how often you're having a bowel movement. And if you're not going every day, we try to help you go every day. That's because why it's not good for you is the bottom line is that there's stuff in your stool that's supposed to come out that's not coming out.
So, right. So there's a lot of toxins in there that you want to get rid of, right?
That's right.
That's why it's stool.
Right. So there's toxins that are coming out. There could be microorganisms that you want to come out. There's another function of having bowel movements. So when you eat fiber, one of the things that fiber does is it gives you a low-grade irritation of your digestive system. So one of the ways you get protein in your diet, believe it or not, is you recycle your own. So when you eat fiber, it's like the scrubbing bubbles of your digestive system.
And you're funny.
Well, yeah. So the inside of your digestive system is like your skin. It's a covering called epithelial tissue. So there's 7 layers, and at the top layer, the one that interacts with the actual food that's going through, Eventually those cells wear out and they need to be sloughed off. And so when you eat fiber and you have regular bowel movements, you have a regular turnover of those cells. When it's happening in the small intestine, you can actually digest them. You can reabsorb the protein in them and you can reuse them to make proteins and to make enzymes. Enzymes are proteins as well. And when they're simply in your colon, you're not going to reabsorb them and reuse them. They're just going to come out. But because you're sloughing off cells, anything that's getting, when you have good cellular turnover, if there's any cells that are starting to de-differentiate, they're differentiating in a way that's dysplastic or could be going towards cancer. If you are having regular bowel movements, that's less likely to happen because you're getting fiber through there and you're getting a good scrub of your colon all the time. That's why they have those things called colon glow. Mm. Yeah. So that's why. So you want to be regular to prevent colon cancer so that you're not reabsorbing toxins, so you have good hormonal balance. So that the things in your body that your body has decided you shouldn't have anymore, so it comes out. It also will help to prevent any reproductive cancer and prostate cancer and really any kind of cancer at all. Because if you have, you know, nitrosamines or, you know, acrylamides that are tagged for excretion through your stool, and they get reabsorbed, they could potentially cause cancer anywhere.
So what do you suggest to someone who's having this issue?
Who has constipation?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing you have to do, if somebody's constipated, you have to find out what's going on with them because, you know, constipation can be caused by a lot of things. So you have to treat the person. You have to get to know the person and find out what's going on in their lives. Sometimes it's psychological. They have a problem. They just have a problem with going to the bathroom. Sometimes
the public place thing.
There's the public place. Yeah, yeah. The bashful stool. Absolutely.
Yep.
So
yep.
There's that. That can be an issue. Sometimes frequently people just don't eat enough produce, that they're eating too much starch and sugar and they're not eating enough produce and protein, or they're simply eating a diet that just doesn't work for them. Because every time I say they're not eating enough produce and protein, I think of Carl, who eats very little produce and he's fabulous, but he's also not eating junk. So when you eat chemicals and processed foods and refined grains and refined sugars, that's going to tend to slow you down, unless you're the sort of unless your genetics dictate that when you eat that sort of thing, it speeds you up, and that happens too. But we're talking about constipation right now. So if somebody's constipated, you got to find out what's going on with them, various conditions can cause that. So hypothyroidism, if somebody's really constipated, you want to make sure they don't have a thyroid problem, because anything that slows your metabolism down is going to make you more constipated. If they're not hypothyroid. Frequently, it's because they're not eating a diet that works for them. And frequently, it's because they're eating too much starch and sugar and they're not eating enough clean protein and produce. And so you get them on that path and that really helps them. One of the things I often do when somebody's really constipated is I'll start them right away taking high-dose magnesium. So how I do that is I use a magnesium powder, and there's several magnesium powders on the market that are good quality magnesium. Sometimes it's magnesium bisglycinate, sometimes it's magnesium citrate, or sometimes it's citrate malate. So it depends on the product, and there's even a magnesium L-threonate that I'll use, although for that purpose I don't like to use it because magnesium L-threonate is expensive. And you like to save that for people who really need the magnesium in their brains. So if you're very anxious, we like to give you the 3-in-8 because it'll get into your brain and it'll help you calm down. But if that's not such a big issue for you, you can use a cheaper magnesium. And quite honestly, magnesium oxide, which is the cheapest magnesium that's not absorbed well, that's why it works. It's not absorbed very well. It will work to help your constipation. In fact, you have to be careful not to take too much magnesium because you can get loose stool. So what I usually do is I'll give somebody a preferred magnesium powder. I'll have them start with 2 teaspoons a day in water. They can drink it in warm water or cold based on their preference. Some of the magnesiums that you get, they fizz. And if you enjoy fizz, I say put it in the cold water so you can enjoy the fizz, and that would be me. Some people don't like the fizz, or they prefer to have a warm drink, so you tell them put it in warm water. The fizz will go away, and you can sip on your nice magnesium drink, and it will be very calming. It's very nice. So you start with 2 teaspoons at bedtime, and I like to use powder because it's very easy to finely titrate your dose. If you use capsules, then you're left with taking one capsule at a time, and you have to go up in big increments of milligrams. either that or you have to break the capsules apart. So you start with 2 teaspoons a day, and then you ask the patient to increase their dose by 1/4 teaspoon every day until they get some loose stool. And when they get the loose stool, that means they're taking too much. It's not harmful. It just means that if you take too much magnesium, it comes out the other end. That's what happens. So it draws water to it. And then you get loose stool. So then we ask them to back off to the last dose they took where they get a normal daily bowel movement. So depending on the patient, they might need 2 teaspoons, 2.5 teaspoons. I've had patients need 2 tablespoons. And they're probably pretty magnesium deficient, or they're over the years, their bowels have become very sluggish. So magnesium does a couple of things. It does draw water to it. So that excess magnesium, that's why you get loose stool if you take too much. It draws water to it, so it makes your stool not so hard and easier to pass. And the other thing it does is it calms down. So if your colon tends to be tense and tight, or if you tend to be tense and tight, it's going to calm the musculature of your colon down, so you get more regular contractions. So everything just works better. All of your muscle, if you take enough magnesium, all the muscles in your body are going to work better. But if you're constipated and you take a proper dose of magnesium for you, then your colon is going to, it's not going to just totally relax the colon. It's going to make it so the colon has more regular effective contractions, and everything will be much more comfortable. So that's one thing I do. I try to keep people away from, fake stuff. I'm not a huge fan of psyllium, although if people use psyllium and they like it and it works for them, I don't mind it. I mean, psyllium is a fiber. It comes from a particular species of plantain, Plantago psyllium. So these little psyllium husks are just high in fiber, and some people like to use them. What I don't care for about psyllium is that they're not fatty. So you don't get the added benefit of oil helping to lubricate things. And that's why I have a big preference for chia seeds. So if people don't mind eating chia seeds, I really like those. And they can be soaked or not. They work both ways. If you like the consistency of that chia pudding when you've soaked chia seeds and then it gets that sort of gushy texture, that can be a way to eat them. You can also throw chia seeds into smoothies. You can make little energy treats out of them. But if you're trying to correct constipation, you want to take a tablespoon or two a day. And the chia seeds also draw water to them, and they're also oily, so they lubricate. And then the chia seeds that you do absorb, they're a good source of protein and minerals and essential fatty acids. So that's my favorite thing to have people do, to do a bunch of chia seeds and then do magnesium. I'll also encourage people to do probiotics if they're if they're not eating great. I might have them take a probiotic, because sometimes resetting your digestive system with a good probiotic can be helpful. And of course, if they're not drinking enough water, we encourage people to drink water. Being dehydrated can make you constipated, just so you know. And the other thing about constipation can give you brain fog. It can make you feel generally unwell. In the elderly, constipation can look like you're having a stroke. So it's one of those things in the elderly that you have to be really careful about. UTIs and constipation in the elderly can look like a medical emergency. And then you get to the hospital and you find out that they're actually just constipated. So it's really important to have bowel movements every day. And that's why you might think naturopaths are weird for thinking that. Why are we always asking about that? But it is very important. So that's the answer. If you're only having bowel movement 3 or 4 times a week, we as naturopaths, we would like you to go every day so that all of the stuff that's supposed to come out comes out. There are other ways to help with, there's other ways that people get constipated. Women will get more constipated in menopause. And one of the reasons for that is that, estrogen pushes the production of bile. So you make less bile when you're in menopause. So if you're having a problem with constipation, the other population that'll get constipated is, so say you've had ovarian cancer or breast cancer, and you have to take either an aromatase inhibitor like Arimidex or the other aromatase inhibitors, your anastrozole or letrozole, and or if you're asked to take tamoxifen. which is a SERM, a selective estrogen response modifier, right? So anyway, those two drugs, one blocks the bonding of estrogen to estrogen receptors. That's the tamoxifen, and then the aromatase inhibitors, they block the production of estrogen from androgens. That's how they work. They block aromatase. So they're aromatase inhibitors. So you don't make any androgens that are hanging around. You don't turn them into estrogen. So they both lower your estrogen status. That's what they're for. And so when you lower estrogen status and you're ready menopausal, then you can be more likely to be constipated. And so when I see that happen, often the answer is to give bile salts or ox bile. So you can give ox bile as a supplement. And I've seen women who are on estrogen blockers be given ox bile and have them become regular. Other medications can make you constipated. A huge one is opioids. Opioids are really bad for constipation. I mean, that just because you have opioid receptors in your colon, and so the opioid receptors get they get stimulated, and certain ones in your colon that just slows everything down. And unfortunately, that's what opioids do. They just slow a lot of stuff down, and so they're known for making you really constipated. And it's really hard to undo the constipation that opioids create. I mean, we can try our chia seeds and our water and our magnesium and all that stuff, and I've seen that stuff not work. And so there are meds that you can get that help with opioid-induced constipation. So sometimes that's what you have to do, because they stimulate the specific opioid receptors that are involved with regularity. So so that can be an issue too. And other meds, if you're hyperthyroid and you're taking an antithyroid medication, that can slow you down as well. The other thing I'll see sometimes is people will take antipsychotics, or either antipsychotics or antidepressants, and that will make them constipated. So when that happens, we try the other things, and sometimes they work. Your probiotics, your magnesium, your water, all of those things. Those sometimes can be helpful. And sometimes it's a matter of changing up the antidepressant. So particularly the ones that will cause it are the ones that are involved with serotonin, because there's definitely serotonin receptors in your digestive system. And the other thing that we'll do is because there's serotonin receptors in the digestive system, if somebody has really intractable constipation, we'll use 5-HTP as a supplement. And I don't like to use that as a first-line treatment, because usually when you have garden variety constipation, it's because you're not eating right, you're stressed, you're hypothyroid. There's something that's more easily correctable. But if it's really intractable and it's been going on for many years, I'll look at 5-HTP. That will do an intervention with something that increases the serotonin in your body, and particularly in your digestive system. And that will sometimes work. Sometimes we have to offer you motility enhancers. And so 5-HTP is one of them. Ginger is also a motility enhancer. So you can take ginger. Ginger will help you be more regular.
Yeah, well, right. You know, if you have an upset stomach, you talk about ginger ale.
Yeah, ginger, right, because ginger is an anti-inflammatory.
Right.
Yeah, so right. If you do, and ginger ale, ginger, there's ginger ale and there's ginger ale. So
well, if you come from the Midwest, if you know anybody from the Midwest, it's Verner's.
Sure. I would need to know what the proportion of ginger to sugar was in your Verner's versus...
I don't know, but it's really good.
Great. Versus a good ginger beer, because sugar is going to slow you down too. I mean, if you're going to do ginger ale, you want to really do ginger beer, because there's a very high concentration of ginger in it. And you might want to actually eat ginger, you know, like... So we had a neat situation. We have lovely Karen at the farmer's market who makes kombucha. And Karen has figured out this cool thing. So when you make kombucha, you have a culture, and it's called a SCOBY. I think I might have talked about this last week, that you have a SCOBY, and the SCOBY is a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. That's what a SCOBY is. And so you throw the SCOBY into your solution of tea and sugar, and then it will grow and make kombucha, and then it will metabolize the tea and the sugar, and it'll make your B vitamins and your vinegar and your glucuronic acid and all the cool things that the SCOBY makes for you. But the other thing that happens is now you have a new SCOBY because you have a new culture. You know, it takes all those nutrients and it reproduces itself. Yay. So now you have another SCOBY. So you can take that new SCOBY and the old SCOBY and use them again and make more kombucha. What can happen is you can wind up having a surplus of SCOBY. And then your friends are like, no, I have enough. You gave me 3 already. So you're like, what do I do with all these SCOBYs? And you feel bad throwing them out. Mind you, putting them in the compost is a good idea if you're using the compost to grow your garden. Having those wonderful probiotics in the soil is actually going to be very good for you, and some of them are going to get on your produce that you make. But another thing you could do is what Karen does is she makes candy out of it. So I'm assuming she takes the SCOBYs and she dries it and she mixes it with some fruit or some other ingredients, and then she gives you a flavored dried SCOBY. It's really good. So 1 week she did dragon fruit, and another week she did ginger, and I think she minced ginger into the SCOBY because it was really potent. And that's brilliant. Ginger SCOBY, what a great way to heal your digestive system, because you're getting concentrated probiotics. And they're not like a probiotic pill. It's like the actual SCOBY that's like, if you put that SCOBY into tea and sugar, it's going to turn into kombucha. They're live. They're ready to go. And you mix it with ginger, so you get this great anti-inflammatory effect, and it's wonderful. So,
or you can have Ron's ginger drink.
Yes, and you can have you can have that where, and your ginger drink is, where you boil your ginger, you simmer your ginger for an hour.
Using raw ginger.
And you simmer it for an hour. Sister tells me you can go to the Asian store and get the ginger drink there, which is these ginger granules that you can get, and they use it for upset tummies and things like that. That's like probably equal parts ginger and sugar, or maybe it's 1 part ginger to 3 parts sugar. It's very sweet. So if you're trying to heal your belly, sugar's not the best thing.
So we'll stay away from Werner's then.
Why does Werner have a lot of sugar?
It has high fructose corn syrup.
Oh.
Which is really unfortunate. Each 12-ounce serving contains about 150 calories. It's ginger ale contains both natural and artificial flavoring. The primary flavor value profile comes from ginger root, which tends to be in part a citrus flavor when added to carbonated sodas. So it's also flavored with vanilla bean extract. That's the catch right there. It's got like this
vanilla-y
unique vanilla-y thing, going. But they use high fructose corn syrup. Fizzled my whole love of Werner. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, if you drink any soda that's a soda and it's got 150 calories in it, it's going to have a decent amount of sugar in it. And mind you, if that's all you got, ginger ale may settle your stomach if it's got strong ginger in it. That's why if you're going to go for a soda, I would say go for ginger beer. Ginger beer tends to be more potent than ginger ale. You know, it tends to have more ginger in it. And you can look at other brands. And if you're going to go ginger and fizzy, it would be better if you went to ginger kombucha, and you can get ginger flavored kombucha. If you're going to go for a bottle and you're not going to make it yourself, better to grab the kombucha than to grab the straight up soda, because now you're getting into, less sugar, less calories, and you've got wonderful probiotics in it. That's really the way to settle your stomach, to use your good probiotics. So, so regularity is important. I mean, it seems like a funny thing to be talking about, but having regular, having a bowel movement every day is an important thing.
It's a good thing. Keeps the doctor away.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So if that's not happening to you, it's a really good idea to go to your physician and figure out what's going on and have them help you, because you need to have a workup. You can't just, you shouldn't just take, because you can take Colace and other stool softeners, and they're chemical stool softeners. They don't do anything good for you. I mean, they're not particularly harmful, but they're chemicals. And there's so many better ways to go. And also, when you have
is that a
problem,
play on words?
When you have when you have constipation, it's really a good idea to treat the cause and find out what's causing it in the first place so that you can treat it well. All right. So there you go. So I think I'm done talking. So,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's enough.
Wow. Can I quote that?
No.
No.
All right. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the call-in talk show about health and natural medicine. I'm Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can also email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.